Hello, we're going to be talking about what's new in ASP.NET. I don't know about you, I started developing websites somewhere around 1999, I think. And ASP.NET was pretty much the first web platform that I used. I did a little bit of CGI and stuff, but ASP.NET was kind of the first web framework that I ever used. And we've gone a bit of a journey with ASP. There's, I guess it's since its inception as ASP, that's nearly 20 years ago in 1996. There's been tons and tons of changes, tons and tons of things that have happened to our framework. And I've kind of condensed them into things that I think are really important. Obviously, the first thing being ASP in 1996 is the first kind of version of any form of ASP. It was much very different to the kind of ASP.NET that we know today. But this kind of the web in 1996 was just taking off. Lots of people, lots of companies were starting to realize the commercial benefits and commercial opportunities inside of the web. And in 1996, we developed the first Internet Explorer, the Internet browser at Microsoft, and also the first version of ASP. It was much more of a scripting-based language. And it stayed that way until 2002, when we saw ASP.NET, which was taking the .NET framework, melding it together with ASP and creating this object-oriented framework, which we could start using inside of our web app, start building web applications from. ASP.NET was wildly popular. Lots of companies started adopting it, enterprises, lots of people built careers around ASP.NET. I learned ASP.NET in around 2002 as well from a website called Four Guys from Rolla. Back in 2002, that was pretty much the only place in the world to learn it, as far as I could see at least. This was before Stack Overflow and all those things. But you could go on to Four Guys from Rolla, learn ASP.NET, learn how to create these websites and so forth. And that's pretty much how I created my career from 2002 all the way to 2008. I was an ASP.NET developer building a line of business applications for various companies. Then 2008, I joined a company called Misco and started building an MVC website. So in 2008, Microsoft released this thing called ASP.NET MVC. And I guess it was a thinking, look, web forms is great for productivity, building forms for your web applications. It's very similar to building desktop applications with forms as well. Lots of people were familiar with that already. So it made a lot of sense to kind of use that developer productivity and build great tools around it. But one of the things that, one of the byproducts of that sort of forms approach to web development was that you kind of abstracted away the essence of the web, which is HTTP. And MVC was kind of stripping that away and getting back to the basics of how the web works. There are requests from browsers, they come into a web server. It all happens over HTTP. You handle that request, you route it to a file. MVC seemed like a much more modern framework in 2008. So we built our first application in ASP.NET MVC. The first one wasn't particularly successful, but never mind. Gradually I became an MVC web developer. That's where I've stuck to today. Now, the evolution since 2008 to 2016 has been great in terms of the way that the web has moved forward and lots of different things, maybe focusing away from server-side stuff, looking more at front-end in my own career. And the Microsoft stack has changed very much in that time as well. 2010, we saw the ASP.NET web pages stuff coming out. Now, you might think, well, that's not a big deal in ASP.NET, but actually that was the first glimpse of the Razor syntax that we now use in Vue inside of MVC. And then in 2012, we saw the Web API and SignalR. Now, those are interesting frameworks, of course, and they're specifically SignalR. It's awesome. But what was really core about those two things is it started thinking about the OWN-compatible servers, or thinking about how you build a server or a web service which can run on an OWN-compatible server. And that was really the foundations for ASP.NET Core. And the kind of, I imagine that in those sorts of meetings when they were thinking about Web API and SignalR, they were thinking, actually, we could build a Web API, we could build a SignalR, we could build a web framework which was built on top of OWN, which maybe could go across different web servers, not just IIS. And really, that became the concept of an ASP.NET Core web framework which ran everywhere, not just on Windows, not just on IIS. So in 20 years, we've gone from a very basic scripting language to a very modern web development language, which is known throughout the world. And what I guess we're doing at the moment in 2016 is we're reinventing the ASP.NET framework. And the reason why we're reinventing it is because we want another 20 years of ASP. We want another 20 years of web development in Microsoft. So ASP.NET Core, this is it's open source, and it's been open source from day one. If you go onto GitHub, you can see ASP.NET, the ASP.NET project. All of the different various projects which make up ASP. There's been a core goal to make it faster. One of the criticisms of previous versions of ASP.NET is that it's slower than some of our competitors in terms of the web frameworks. And they wanted to address that. We can build a much faster framework with the knowledge that we have now. And if we re-architect, we can create a much faster and leaner system. And that's certainly what they've done with ASP.NET Core. And we'll look at that a little bit later in more detail. And they want to make it more modular and composable. At the moment, with ASP.NET, you've got a kind of massive monolithic framework which does everything, which is wonderful for productivity. It's all there. If you ever need a particular library, it's probably in the framework. But you are actually paying for that in some respects, because every project that you build has that monolithic framework, and perhaps you're only using 10% of that whole framework. But you're still, you know, loading those DLLs into memory. You're still running the requests through the pipeline. And that pipeline might be doing things that you don't really need it to be doing, but you have to do it because there's no way of making it more modular or breaking it down. It's just you'll have this huge framework, which you're and system.web.dll, which you're kind of running everything through. So one of the goals was to try and create a more modular, more composable request pipeline framework, so that that you could make faster applications ultimately. And more manageable applications, I guess, as well. Lots of the features inside of an ASP.NET Core website are packages, NuGet packages specifically. So you'll find that things have moved out of the core, the base framework that you're using in ASP.NET, and now include inside of NuGet packages. So when you want to use a particular feature, rather than it being in the main framework, you probably have to pull in a NuGet package to light that feature up. You can now also ship the framework, the ASP.NET Core framework, because it's now smaller, with the application, which is quite a useful trick. When I joined Microsoft, I was working on a project with a major transportation company. We're building this little tiny thing, this little tiny little web applet thing, which we were going to put on the front page of their website. And I remember thinking, right, well, I need to build this thing, and I built it in, think, ASP.NET 3.5 or something like that. And I just joined Microsoft. This was somewhere around 2010. So I built it in the latest and greatest stuff, and I had the project finished, and I got sign off from the customer, and we're going to put it live on their website. So we went to go and put it live, and I found out that to get stuff live in Microsoft, I had to phone up the Dublin data center and say, this is the project that I've got. I had to fill out a form in triplicate, send it back to the team, and then they would take my DLLs and deploy it. And when they got all of the web application and they went to deploy it, they were like, this is a 3.5 application. And I was like, yeah, of course, this is the latest stuff. Well, not that late. It's like 6 months since it's been released inside of Microsoft. But yeah, it's a 3.5 application. Oh, the problem is our servers are all ASP.NET 2, and we can't run 3.5 stuff. And we can't upgrade the server because there's stuff running on those servers, and we don't want to accidentally cause a problem by updating the framework on the server and unnecessarily like knocking other applications out of the way. Which is crazy, because this is Microsoft, and 6 months after release of their framework, they weren't actually able to deploy it in production at Microsoft. It blew my mind. It turns out that Azure was just coming online at the time, so I actually put it live on Azure. Thinking, and also this was before the credit card restrictions as well on Azure. So I put it live on Azure. I used my own personal credit card to get around the bureaucracy. Thought I was being quite smart and clever. I deployed it to this major national website, and didn't have a spending limit because they didn't exist on Azure at the time. And within 3 days, I think I had something like a £3,000 bill for the web hosting, which luckily Azure's got a lot cheaper since then. And also, they've got spending caps on it. But I had massively underestimated the popularity of this particular component and the transportation website of the company at the time. But never mind, lesson learned. An interesting conversation with my boss when I had to try and expense that. But the point being that we've got this we've got the ability now to take the application, which you're building, your web application, and the framework, which it goes along with, combine them up together in a single bundle, deploy that out, and it can go side by side with other applications on the same server. One, that server might be running, you know, a different version of .NET, but it can also run your ASP.NET Core application as well. And if we release ASP.NET Core 2 or 1.5 or whatever, you'll be able to have an ASP.NET Core 1 application on the server and an ASP.NET Core 2 application running side by side on the same server and not hurting each other, not sharing the same framework, and you don't have any of those issues of incompatibility with, you know, the global framework, which is shared by all the applications. So ultimately, the team can get faster. And what I mean by that is, because the monolithic framework has now been broken down into these little NuGet packages, it means that the team, the ASP.NET team, don't have to wait for a yearly cycle to update something or to bug fix something. They can just change that simple NuGet package and update that one thing and push that live. So you should see much more agility in the ASP.NET team by these NuGet packages and the feature packages will be able to be updated far, far more quickly. It's really fast. We've got much faster startup times of the applications themselves. There's higher density, so that you're actually able to be running more websites on less hardware. And we're starting to have full control of the pipeline. We'll show you a little bit later what that means, but it's there's fundamentally a pipeline of when your request comes into the server, a browser comes to the server and sends a request to your website. There's a pipeline of activities that goes through before it then comes back. And you're in complete control of that pipeline now. If you want to just listen on the socket that comes in and pass back a really fast response, just basically listening on the socket in the same way that maybe you would do in something like Node, you absolutely can now. Then in previous versions of .NET, you didn't really have control over how system.web handled that request coming in. It was probably doing all sorts of things inside of that system.web DLL, which you didn't have control over. You couldn't control or change that pipeline at all. So when a request came in, you know, it was a black box. Now you have complete control over what happens to that request when it comes into the server, and you can respond as quickly as you want. If you want to listen to the socket and respond instantly, if you want to pass it through static pages, static page piece of middleware, if you want to pass it through the MVC middleware, then you can. If you want to take different pieces of middleware and line them up and so that the request comes through these different pieces of middleware and then back before it sends a response, you've got complete control of how requests are handled inside of an ASP.NET application for the first time. It's also cross-platform. It will run on Windows, Mac, and Linux. And when we say Mac, we don't obviously mean that you'll be running these, you'll be running your actual production website on a Mac. It's more on the Mac for development purposes. And on Windows and Linux, that's where you would actually be hosting your sites. So you can run this on all three of those things, but really the Mac one is there just for development purposes. If you want to build ASP.NET Core applications on a Mac, you don't have Windows, then you can now do that. And obviously you can build on Windows and Linux as well, but you can also host on Linux servers and Windows servers as well. It's cross-platform not only just in the framework, but because of the work that the Roslyn team have done with creating the open source compiler for C#, it's now easier for companies and individuals to create editors for this framework as well, for C# projects generally, but in turn ASP.NET Core applications too. And there's a number of these which are available now. Visual Studio Code, for example, is a cross-platform editor, which is developed, so happens obviously by Microsoft, but that is a cross-platform editor you can use to build ASP.NET Core applications along with all sorts of other applications as well. And I think this will become a much more common thing inside of the industry. You'll start seeing more people bring out editors, IDEs specifically for developing C# on Mac and Linux. I think gone are the days when Visual Studio has kind of is the only IDE that people use for C# web development specifically. And maybe you'll see editors like the mono editors and so forth, there'll be more, you'll start to see that come through much more in the web industry in the same ways that it has done for applications and desktop applications. So the other big thing is that this thing is completely open source. And it means that not only is the framework, but the underlying, all of the underlying building blocks of this framework are all open source. And it just means that there are things that Microsoft will do to make this thing go cross-platform, but there's also the opportunity now for the community to take it to places which Microsoft might not want to or might not have any interest in taking it, but people could take all of the bits and port it to different systems and different places. So the fact that it's open source, the fact that there's lots of investment in cross-platform, I think is only is a really, really good thing for us and for Microsoft. So in terms of looking at the website where this stuff is held, go over to GitHub, github.com, and the application is project is ASP.NET. And here you will see all of the different ASP.NET kind of projects which are going on, which make up ASP.NET. So if we look over, there's the Kestrel HTTP server, which is the kind of cross-platform self-hosting server that you can run ASP.NET Core applications on, based on LibView. We've got the dependency injection project. There's the performance project. That's a really interesting one, which shows you kind of the performance of the framework and how many requests per second this framework's able to handle. It's quite a lot at the moment. We've got the entity framework stuff, which we're going to be talking about a little bit later. We've got, really importantly, the docs, the documentation for ASP.NET Core. If you're wanting to get yourself involved in ASP.NET Core, and maybe you don't really know how to get started or where to get going, and this is a great place to start, is to actually contribute to the documents. Because if we go to them, actually live, excuse me, docs.asp.net, you'll see that there's a ton of sort of tutorials, but there's an awful lot of these little spanners which are going on this website. And that is, you know, a placeholder for content that they want, but yet they're still working on the content. And with any of these things, if you ever spot a mistake or maybe you want to contribute to it, oops, I was hoping, if you want to contribute to it, you can just click on the edit on GitHub or, you know, contribute to the actual GitHub repository and make a pull request, and you could have your pull request accepted and merged into the main documents. It's possibly the easiest way to get involved. If you want to know the people which are working on ASP.NET, then all the people are there. There's no secrets in this world. The place where all the development happens on ASP.NET is all on GitHub. There's no secret kind of internal TFS system which then builds to GitHub. This is all public, so you can see all the discussion, all the issues, all of the bits are live on GitHub for anyone to go see and to comment and contribute on. And lots of people have. In fact, many of the contributions of people contributing are not necessarily directly from Microsoft. Lots of them are from other alternative companies and other companies which work on it. There's some great Iliad Games from the UK, for example, are doing some great work contributing onto the Kestrel HTTP server. They're one of the core contributors. I think they've contributed more code than some of the Microsoft employees, in fact. If you're wanting to know a little bit more about this stuff and you're kind of interested in the live.asp.net, you're interested in how it's getting developed, then they do a weekly .asp.net community stand-up on live.asp.net, and it's kind of like an hour-long Google Hangout where a few of various people in the ASP.net community team, Scott Hanselman, John Galloway, Damian Edwards, and guests, kind of talk about ASP.NET and where it's moving. And it's really useful if you're, especially if you're on the cutting edge and the bleeding edge of this, I think it's fascinating to see a project like this, how it's evolved and the reasons behind decisions. That's one of the great things about the GitHub repo as well. You can start to see, if something's changed in ASP.NET, you can start to see, well, why did it change? Why did they make that choice? Why did they do X, Y, or Z? And all of it's pretty much explained out there. Even some of the sometimes when they make missteps and they make wrong decisions, they explain why they made those decisions and various other things. So if you're interested in the development of this platform, then I can wholeheartedly recommend that kind of hangout, weekly hangout. So docs.asp.net, live.asp.net. So let's go and build something. So if we go into Visual Studio, oops, and we go File, New, Project. Now the first thing you should note about this is if you're a VB.NET developer, currently this is not VB.NET. You're going to only be able to do stuff in C Sharp, and it's also MVC as well. So it's not there's no ASP.NET Core web forms at the moment. The only kind of middleware framework is MVC, and it's all in C Sharp. They did say that they will, somewhere in quarter three of this year, probably release a first version of it in Visual Basic as well, VisualBasic.net. But at the moment, if you want to play with this stuff, it's all in C Sharp. So if we go into ASP.NET Core web application, you'll note that there's a few different types of ASP.NET application. We've got ASP.NET Web Application.NET Framework. So that is a ASP.NET, that's kind of like an ASP.NET application which you'll be using today. The stuff that you'd be using 4.6 version of the framework, on the full version of the framework, not using core at all. Then you have another project type, ASP.NET Core Web Application.NET Core, and ASP.NET Core Application.NET Framework. Because you can build ASP.NET Core applications on the core framework, but also on the full FAT framework. The difference being, really, is that the .NET framework version will only work on Windows, and the .NET Core version, that can go cross-platform. So if you only ever want to host this on Windows, and perhaps you have third-party libraries which have specific dependencies on features of the .NET framework, the full FAT version of the .NET framework, then you can still build ASP.NET Core web applications, but target the .NET framework, and it gives you slightly more compatibility with some libraries, and also, but it does limit you to being just on Windows. And then you've got the ASP.NET Core web application, but on the .NET Core framework, which is, you know, building on targeting the .NET Core, this new CLR. So we're going to say ASP.NET Core Web Application.NET Core, create that thing. Now we're giving three templates that we can use. We have empty, web API, and web application. For the purposes of this, we're going to choose empty. And it's more empty than it's ever been before. If you've ever used ASP.NET stuff before, we often say empty frameworks, and they're never empty. Now, it was emptier when it first, the first few betas of this, it was far emptier. It's relatively empty now. We have a few bits of pieces in here. First thing is first, we have a program.cs file. Now, this is relatively new in terms of the RC2 version of ASP.NET. It wasn't in RC1 or any of the betas. And this aligns ASP.NET with other .NET project types. So if you think of ASP.NET Core, the application, as kind of like a command line app, then you're not that far wrong from what it is. And it starts with a program.cs, and that has a void main in it. And that kind of bootstraps your application. So for all intents and purposes, your application is just like a console app. So when .NET Core boots up your application, it opens up program.cs, it opens up the void main, and it runs this little bit of code, which is kind of bootstrapping your application, and it's saying using startup and creating and starting up your web application with various stuff, and we start to run the web application. The next important file is this startup.cs file. The two main things that you're going to have to worry about inside of startup.cs is configure services and configure. In the empty framework, they've got the bare minimum what you could do in a web application. So we've got app.run, and then it's got an async await thing, which basically is responding with hello world. So this is the most basic thing that the server can do. And if we run this up, this is basically like listening to port 80 and just responding with a response saying hello world. We're not running it through MVC, we're not running it through any middleware. And because we're not running it through any MVC or anything like that, whatever URL I give it, it's always going to respond hello world, because it doesn't care what it gets. It always responds with hello world. It's going to be very, very fast, but but pretty useless unless all you want to do with your website is respond with a word. But this is kind of this is showing that the power of the pipeline, because this configure method is where you start to configure your pipeline and configure what's inside of your pipeline. And we'll see in sort of more complex examples, we'll start to add stuff in here. Now, for example, we might want to, inside of our application, we might want to handle something like files, you know. So let's try and do that. So if we go to app, and I'm going to use a piece of middleware called use static files. Now you'll see I'm getting a red underlined squiggly, and it's saying does not contain a definition for use static files. That's because use static files is not part of the framework. And it's going to ask me to install that part of the framework. So I'm going to basically here, by pressing add package microsoft.net ASP.NET core.static files, I'm fundamentally adding a NuGet file. And you'll see that the red underline's now gone away to my application. So over here, when I added that thing through Visual Studio, what it actually did was it added this line into the project.json file. And so it said, go to NuGet and get me microsoft.asp.net core.static files, and then a version number. You can manage it by editing this project.json file. You can do it through the tool with a nice little quick helper. Or you can right-click on the application and you can manage your NuGet packages, because these are ultimately just NuGet packages. You could also do it through the package console or wherever, however you want to do it, so you can see what's installed and you can browse for other NuGet packages and install them. But however you do it, ultimately, the NuGet packages for the moment are going to get added to this project.json. So I can see all of my dependencies for this application here. I've got static files there now added. There's a new concept, this www.root folder. This is the base of your application. And to this www.root folder, I'm going to add an existing item from my pictures. This will do. Picture of Bill. Bill.jpg. Now, I'm just going to remove that for a second and just start this application up. So if I go to bill.jpg right now, I don't want to spell it right, bill.jpg right now, it's just going to come back with the world, hello world. Because the pipeline at the moment is just running this thing here. Now, if I add this into my pipeline, use static files, this piece of middleware looks on disk for that file when it matches certain extensions. So now when I run Bill, we get the Bill picture of Bill Gates that we want. Now, of course, if that static files came after, Bill wouldn't show up, because the first rule takes precedence. It's in order. Oh. No, there you go. Sorry, I thought that was a little bit bug there. If I go to bill.jpg now, it's still coming back with hello world, because this kind of overrides that, and it's before that, so it goes in order of the pipeline. So we're sort of building up a pipeline now. I probably want it that way around rather than that way, though. So that's configure and how we set up a pipeline in ASP.NET Core. So the kind of important files in here, we've got startup, we've got project.json, we've got program.cs. that's kind of it for the empty framework, and we'd have to go and build a more complicated application if we wanted. We'd have to add some more stuff to the application to make it more complicated. So what I'm going to do instead is just go file, new project, and start. Same ASP.NET Core web application we're using on the .NET Core, but this time I'm going to choose the full FAT framework. And this is a little bit more complicated. So we have a few different things that have shown up now in the root folder. We've now got a startup.cs here. And inside the configure, it's getting a bit more complicated. The pipeline in this example is a little bit more tricky. Excuse me. So we have we've got a console, which is adding logging. Sorry. We've got a little if statement, which says, if this application is in development mode, then use these things. Else, don't use these things. Don't use browser link. Don't use database errors and so forth. This is a first class concept. So that is development thing. It's basically looking up an environment variable, which is set over here. So this one's in development mode at the moment. If you switch that, it would either go into is development. I think you've got is staging. Is staging is production. We'll just leave it in is development. So if it's in development mode, you're going to add the exception pages so that the developer knows what the exceptions are, error pages. And it's going to use browser link as well. And if it's not, if it's in production, or staging, I guess, it's going to use the exception handles, the exception handlers there. They've next got use static files. So obviously, if you want to handle sort of JavaScript, CSS, images like we showed earlier, then they add in the authentication or the identity stuff, a piece of middleware. You see, all of these things are just pieces of middleware that you build up your pipeline. So a request coming into your server is going to go through all of these pieces of middleware, and they're going to be passed through each stage, and you can configure it exactly how you wish for your application to respond. And then perhaps the most important one is MVC. So we've got app.use MVC. So in this application, we're going to be using MVC. Obviously, that's kind of the only framework that we're providing. We don't have an option to use web forms at the moment. But there's nothing stopping people writing their own kind of middleware here. You could quite easily write a competitor to MVC or a different like web forms or whatever you wish. You could write that, or someone could write that thing, and I'm sure that people will. But in the instance of MVC, we pass in the routes as a parameter to the routing system. And this is just a very basic default route, which forwards the default control, the thing, over to the controller and an action. And so depending on the URL, it's going to forward over to the various controllers or various actions. And you would add all your various routes in here. Unlike ASP.NET at the moment, where you configure that in a separate file, this is all configured within the pipeline. So the stuff around views, that's kind of very similar. So you'll note that we still have we've got a view starts folder, a view imports folder. So these two, this is a convention, by the way, if you don't know this from previous versions of MVC. These things, the view start thing, so the fact that these applications, unless you explicitly change the layout, it will always use this default layout. It will load some of these default namespaces into your Razor views. There's a shared layout, which is going to be like the kind of, if you're not familiar with MVC, it's about like your master page, I guess. Inside of that that layout, there will be a place where you'll have render body. And then anything which is using any of the views, they will, because their layout's been defined by that view start file, they're going to render this body inside of that layout file. And that's how you're going to get this this kind of the style across your application working. So the views work identically to how views have always worked inside of ASP.NET. Razor's not changed that much. I guess the biggest change in Razor is the stuff around tag helpers. So if we go down to the register page, you will see there's not like tons of HTML helpers or things here. What we've got a lot more of are these things, ASP4 email, ASP4. And these are kind of like attributes that you add on to existing controls, or you can create new controls yourself. And this is called tag helpers, and it's kind of a new way of doing what you would have previously achieved using HTML helpers in an old version of MVC. you're now using tag helpers, and we'll look a little bit more into that in a moment. Your controllers are very similar if you've done MVC before. So we've got a home controller and an index action, which returns the view. And there's not much to write home really about there. It's very similar to previous versions. We've got a web root folder, which contains all of our static files, like CSS images, JS, and libraries, and we've got the favicon stuff. Now, if you want to get third-party libraries into web root, you might be using something that we call Bower. I'm just going to show all files, and we'll see that in somewhere in here, we have a bower.json file. And Bower is the way that we, in ASP.NET Core, handle, or one of the ways that you can handle, client-side libraries. NuGet would have been perhaps the way that you'd have done this previously, but now in ASP.NET Core, we're supporting Bower. Lots of other web frameworks use Bower, and basically what this allows us to do is inside this application, I can add any JavaScript framework that I want, and Bower will go ahead and install it and download it in the same way as sort of NuGet would install third-party client libraries for .NET. So here I go, I've added 10-digit legal. It's also one of my favorite new things about this platform is that we can now play a game called pickanoun.js. So any noun which you can think of, maybe, toilet. Oh, it's not a good example. Water. Yeah, there's a thing called water. Waterberry, watercolor, waterfall. They're JavaScript frameworks, and you can add them to your application. So if Bower is a NuGet, a package manager for front-end libraries. So if you're using jQuery, Angular, whatever you're using, you'll be able to get it from Bower now. And it's probably more complete. It has more frameworks than, say, NuGet does. So we kind of now have Bower for client-side front-end libraries, and we have NuGet for server-side C-sharp third-party libraries. There's also a file in your root called gulp, which Martin's going to talk about in the next session. And it's basically, it's a way of building and creating stuff for your front-end pipeline. So when you're, maybe you're minifying your content, or maybe you're moving some files around at build time, you might do that through gulp, and Martin will explain a little bit more about that, so I won't go any more into that from now. So let's just look a little again at our Razor syntax stuff. So I mentioned this before about the controllers, the tag helpers, on these different tags. So we've got form here, and it's been instrumented with ASP-controller account. So this is no longer using a HTML helper to create a controller action in our view. We're just creating a form element and then adding this ASP controller. And what will happen on server side is that this is going to be interpreted. It's going to run through a little parser, and it will output a Razor form for us where you'd expect it to, which is very cool. What's cool about this kind of syntax is that no longer will we have this problem of having all these HTML helpers inside of our Razor views. We're now just left with very standard-looking HTML elements, which have just been got these additional things which mean something to Razor but don't necessarily mean anything to the web developer, which is maybe doesn't know about ASP.NET. Perhaps there's a designer which is working on this, and they just want to add a CSS class to this form. Well, they can go ahead and do that now without having to know the intricacies of how HTML helpers and so forth work. These are quite a cool. These tag helpers are quite a cool little element. So if I go into open another project, so open up the actual website that we use for the web platform day. So let's just look at this tag helper that we're going to create. We go to the repeat tag helper here. This is basically a very basic tag helper that I'm implementing. It's just a class called, it's called repeat tag helper. That's a convention. And basically when it finds any tag helpers in the application, it's going to execute this piece of code. It inherits from tag helper. That's how ASP.NET knows that it's a piece of a tag helper. It's got one property called count, And it's got this thing called process, which will actually create the output for my tag helper. So the way that I would use this in code would I'd write a tag helper like this, say repeat count 10. And what I want to do is when Razor encounters this piece of code, I want it to intercept this, replace it with a div element, and then repeat whatever's inside of this 10 times. So if I now look at the repeat tag helper, the first thing I do is I change the tag name. So from repeat, I change the tag name to div. And then for 0 to the number which is contained inside of count, which you'll see on the index.html there is set to 10. So that whatever property I put in there, it maps to this public integer. And so it's coming as 10, so it's going to go and loop through this 10 times. And I'm going to firstly get whatever's inside of the tag helper piece of content, which is the world hello. And then I'm going to get the output content, append hello, then append some HTML, which is just a line break. And then it's going to do that 10 times, or however many times, which is in the count. So what I should end up with on my main page, where I've just added that thing, is this thing, right? I've got a hello, 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 hello. So I could add that. I could change the on the index page. I could change that to say 200. And of course, it will repeat 200 times. Whilst that's loading. Actually, no, there you go. And because of a weird graphics bug, it's also expanded the image, which is on the back there, but never mind. So you can see 200 hello has been printed 200 times because of that repeat tag helper, which is possibly not a very useful use of tag helpers, but it should show the point that you can make these tag helpers yourself, and Razor can then interpret any tag. It doesn't have to be a tag. In this instance, we're creating a whole tag. It just could be a property of a tag or whatnot that you can intercept. Now, Razor knows, just to sort of close this off, just the reason why it knows that the repeat tag helper is an actual thing that it needs to look for is because down in, I think it's in view start or view imports, yeah, view imports, I have this thing. Firstly, it includes all of the tag helpers that ASP.NET has. All of the tag helpers inside of the ASP.NET project. So these are the Microsoft tag helpers, things like form, the stuff to help with all of the controllers and things like that. All of the tag helpers are built in. There's lots of them. They're there. And then I've said, well, everything else which is in the project, which is a tag helper, also included in all of my views. So you add. I've added basically every tag helper in this project. I've not done it explicitly, I've just done it from this project here. So anything that I add which inherits from tag helper will be picked up inside of my project and processed. And so if it finds a repeat tag, because this is using this convention of the name repeat and then tag helper, it will look for the repeat tag. And there's ways that you can have it look for different tag names, maybe different than the class name, so you can avoid that convention, but by convention, because I've named it repeat tag helper, it's looking for tags with the word with repeat as the tag name, and then implementing that stuff. So it's very powerful. It means that we can get away from having all this junk mixture of Razor and HTML helpers and have very, very clean views again. Lastly, I just want to show you a little bit about the .NET CLI. We use this again in the EF session as well, and a few of the other sessions today. But .NET, it replaces, you might have seen if you've looked, been following this, you might have seen things like DNX and DNVM. They've all been replaced by this one thing called .NET, the .NET executable. This is cross-platform, the cross-platform .NET, basically. And I can go into this website application and say .NET, well, if I do help, it will show me all of the options that I have from the .NET command line interface. But maybe the most basic one would be .NET run. It's going to run the application. It starts listing on localhost 5000. And then if I go to my application, localhost, there, I've got my website running there as well. So you can use, or you can start up an application inside of the Visual Studio, but if you're saying on a Mac or on Linux, this is a way that you could just boot this up and have it running. And it's running there inside of Kestrel, which is the HTTP server which comes as part of ASP.NET Core. So this is quite useful for kind of basic testing, testing your application, running it in .NET. You wouldn't use Kestrel as like the hosting, the thing that you actually host your application on. You would use, or you'd front your Kestrel HTTP server with something else like IIS or Nginx on Linux. Anyway, that is enough of showing that. So the new concepts are, it's emptier, there's a www root folder, we now use a thing called gulp, there's a new .NET CLI, there's a thing called Bower. With that, I'll pass over to Martin.